could cause that to come about, and then there would be a sudden, even more sudden, catastrophe. So you've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Time is 9:29. Coming up, we got Parafoggering with Fight the Empire, and you've been listening to KBOO 90.7 FM and other frequencies in Cascadia, and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
KBOO is looking for a grant writer to join our team. We are seeking someone with a proven track record in writing successful, complex proposals for diverse sources of grant funding. Previous experience working in the philanthropic landscape of the Portland metro area is preferred, and previous experiences working with community media organizations and with communities of color are A+. This is a one-year contract position for a total of 200 hours at $25 an hour, and the grant writer will work closely with the KBOO Development Director. For more information, go to our website at kboo.fm and click on the KBOO is Hiring link on the right side of the home page.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire. My name is Parafoggering. We'll start out, let's talk about St. Matthew Island. That's an island out in the middle of the Bering Sea, kind of about 150 miles off the coast of Alaska. Very remote place. And during World War II, the Coast Guard located a little, very small base there, sort of aided navigation. And they had, about 15 or 20 men stationed there. And since it was so remote, they wondered how to feed these guys. Well, they could bring, boatloads of food from the mainland, which is what they did, but just in case, if it turned out that because of bad weather or one thing or another that they couldn't get the food shipments out, they thought, well, let's put a herd of reindeer out there as a kind of emergency food supply. And so then if the guys need it, they can go out and hunt down a reindeer and live on that for a while. So in 1944, they brought a herd of 29 reindeer out to St. Matthew Island. Well, this island is very small. I don't know, about 20 miles or something like that. It's not a big island, but it's covered with lichen, or lichen, how you want to pronounce it. I think the Canadians pronounce it lichen. We pronounce it lichen. Anyway, they brought the 29 reindeer out there in 1944. And since they had no natural enemies, they prospered. They loved to eat. Lichen was their food. That was what they really loved. It's kind of this very thick, mossy green kind of plant, and it was all over the island. And the Coast Guard guys never wound up killing a reindeer, so the reindeer just munched away happily. And then when the war ended, base was shut down, the men went home, and the reindeer stayed. And with no natural enemies and the whole island full of lichen, they really multiplied. By 1957, there was more than 1,300 of them. And just a few years later, in 1963, a scientist went out there to look at the place, and he counted over 6,000 reindeer in 1963. Well, what happened was that only 3 years later, in 1966, that 6,000 population had dropped down to 42, and the island was littered with reindeer skeletons. And soon after that, there were none. So what happened was that the food supply was limited, but the reindeer supply kept multiplying by leaps and bounds until it kind of ran up against the limits, and eventually they ate up all alike and they starved to death. And this is sort of relates to a theory that the animals, they've evolved to fill every niche. When there is food, they will go for it and eat it all up. Well, we might ask, how does that relate to people? And we might think of it this way, that the human society has its, our lichen is fossil fuels. Without fossil fuels, we don't eat oil directly, but oil fuels all our farm machinery. It fuels the supply chains that bring inputs to the big mega farms and sends the food to stores all over the country. The oil helps make the pesticides and weed killers. And so because of oil, one farmer is actually able to feed 100 people. Back in the old days when agriculture first started, half the people in a village might be farmers, or even more than half. Well, the oil changed all that. Oil made it possible for one person's labor, one farmer's labor, to be multiplied greatly, and it allowed other people to find other occupations, and that the remaining farmer would feed them all. Like the old song goes, a farmer is a man who feeds them all. So the oil that we live off of, this oil took millions of years to form. Basically, it's formed not from dinosaurs the way most people think, but just from sediment of plant matter and animal matter, just the building up over the millions of years. And we have used up the humanity, not just America, we have used half of this oil in less than 200 years. So think of that equation. Took millions of years to get there, and we have used half of it in 200 years. We started with the easy oil. The first commercial oil well in Pennsylvania, they drilled down and they struck oil at 69 feet. And as the oil age went on, you had gushers in Texas and Oklahoma where you drill down, and you've all seen the movies where you drill down and this oil under tremendous pressure just comes zooming out up into the air. So the gushers were replaced eventually by deep sea oil. We drilled down under the oceans. Then we drilled horizontally, and we got into fracking. Well, one thing about all these different ways of getting the oil is that they use energy to get the energy. The first oil well in Pennsylvania, all you had to do was drill down a few feet and you get the oil. But when you have to go fracking pumping in chemicals and sand and everything else, it takes a lot of energy to do that. So there's a ratio. There's a ratio of energy back on the energy invested. And you might think of it as net energy. And that keeps going down. That has gone down over the years. So we are getting less oil from our labor than we used to. And this ratio has nowhere to go but down. Well, what about that other half? You know, we used up half the oil that was put there by nature. And what about the other half? Well, that is because of the climate situation we're in now, that is really unusable. Yeah, we can get it and we can burn it, but it is destroying our weather system. You see right now what's happening in Mozambique with this cyclone they're having there has devastated that nation. That is due to fracking and what it does to the economy, the burning of fossil fuels. There's moisture in the air from the weather changes. Droughts have hardened the soil so that any rain that falls runs off instead of sinking into the land. And the sea level is a foot higher now than it was a century ago. We have a caller online. Good morning. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air. Who is this?
Yeah, my name is Jan.
Mm-hmm.
Hi. Okay, I'm calling because of the beautiful connection of this topic you are talking about right now, and ties beautifully to the previous topic from previous half hour. And I would like to let everyone know of existence of successful farming that technically was in use 2,000 years ago or 1,000 years ago in South America. Everyone who is interested in farming and ecology and successful economies should Google Terra Preta dos Indios. Mm. They use charcoal instead of, they would never burn the field, like burn, slash and burn. They would do slash and char, it is carbon, then they would mix it with soil, creating most productive soils in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful movies by National Geographic. Also, Columbia University did a lot of research on it. This is phenomenal. So we technically don't have to do slash and burn and extend forever, because soil enriched with ashes is useless. Ashes mm-hmm. wash out.
Mm-hmm.
So soil enriched with charcoal made from burning wood, it's incomplete burning of wood, becomes extremely water absorbent, nutrient absorbent, does not wash with floods and when water runs over it. So they created soils that are many feet deep, existing today. And it was native people living there, highly cultured, building cities along Amazon, along Orinoco. And mm-hmm. today's farming uses nitrogen, synthetic oil, when they had phenomenal soil, produced man-made soil that retains nutrients. So all the bones of animals, which is source of calcium, organic matter going to it, it's retained, not washed out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so everyone interested, this is solution, and this is non-solution. Switzerland, many other countries are interested in it, but this really will hurt the chemical industry and extraction industry.
Well, thank you very much for bringing that to our attention. I think this is really very important. There is a way to resolve the food problem. Right now, though, Brazil has put this fascist guy Bolsonaro into office, and he has said that he's going to kind of remove the boundaries that the indigenous Amazon people had to protect their lands, and he wants to move in cattle ranches and soy plantations to further destroy the Amazon. And This is a real danger.
Right. Soil that is enriched with charcoal acts like water filter.
Mm-hmm.
Carbon filters we use for water filtration. So technically, that kind of soil not just retains water, nutrients, rhizoma, the bacteria benefiting, producing nitrogen and so on, but also the water that enters back to rivers, that in that instance Amazon, was clean water. So they had plenty of fish, and they never had to move from place to place to find new greener pastures, because their soil was so well established that they never had to expand the area that was used for farming, because it was so productive. And the productivity of soil enriched with charcoal is phenomenal. People right now, even people I know, they are purchasing biochar to make their gardens twice as productive with dramatic reduction use of water and so on.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so please talk more about it. Because
yes, I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you very much for your call.
Pleasure to listen to programs. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, this is very important, folks. We have a way of resolving a lot of problems without a lot of destructive technology. We don't need oil to feed ourselves, and the oil is actually destroying the environment, and it is going to run out anyway, because the value, the oil we get back from what we put in, is sinking all the time. We hear a lot about this fracking boom, and I think, to me, it's sort of like scraping the bottom of the barrel, and we found a way to scrape a little more oil out of the bottom of the barrel, but it is not sustainable, and apparently even Wall Street is finding that out. These companies that engage in fracking, it's been going on now for about 10 years, and they have really yet to show any kind of a profit. They depend on investors who think the next big thing is going to be fracking. So they shovel money at these fracking companies, and that is what they are living on. That is what is paying their salaries. That is what is paying for the all the labor and technology, but they are not selling oil at any kind of a profit. And in fact, there is an article, well, there's several articles. I got one from the New York Times called "The Next Financial Crisis Lurks Underground." And this is from the New York Times of September 1st of last year. And it's by Bethany McLean. And she writes that some of fracking's biggest skeptics are on Wall Street. They argue that the industry's financial foundation is unstable. Frackers haven't proven that they can make money. The industry has a very bad history of money going into it and never coming out, says hedge fund manager Jim Chanos, who founded one of the world's biggest oil investment firms. And so the future is that there is no future for oil. We need to get off of it as soon as possible, but we cannot do that because our economy has gotten so dependent on oil that it's kind of very hard to untangle ourselves. You might have to start from the bottom up, like that caller said, with better kinds of farming, like the biochar, that can kind of rebuild an economy actually from the ground up, from the healthy soil going on upwards into the economy. So right now we're in this situation where oil is killing us, but we're desperate for more. And so the U.S. is plotting a war and overthrow of other countries to keep this dead-end economy going a little longer. And right now the target is Venezuela. You know, Venezuela has all kinds of heavy oil in the Orinoco Basin. And as Donald Trump said, he was quoted, quote, They have all that oil, and they're right on our back door. You know, that cuts through all this nonsense you hear about bringing democracy to Venezuela. We are out to get their oil because we think we need it. And as long as we think we need it, we probably do. But without that oil, our economy would collapse. Now, we should have been thinking about this 20 years ago, and but we haven't thought about it enough or taken enough measures to switch over to a real economy. So the U.S. has had its eye on Venezuela, and we are making oil deals with Bolsonaro in Brazil. They also have a lot of oil out in the ocean, and it is what keeps our military going. We have this huge military budget of approaching $1 trillion a year to revive an economy that is faltering because it's literally running out of fuel. So Venezuela is sort of an easy target for the U.S. because Venezuela, like a lot of oil-rich countries, they depended on the revenue from their exports, from oil, from selling oil, that they could import food and all the other things they needed to live a good life. And we have a caller online. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, you are there.
Okay. Hi. I want to comment. I would imagine that a lot of people are already aware that there is a problem with oil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I would like to perhaps address some of the solutions, and I'm not going to talk very long here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we are discussing the alternative of solar power and also electric cars, we have to take into consideration the fact that the expense, you know, for the average person to, you know, buy an electric car or, you know, purchase solar. Anyway, I'm going to let you comment on what you think some of the solutions are. But as I'm saying, I think most KBOO listeners are already aware that there's a problem, okay?
Now, we're aware. The only thing is the people who run the economy are not as aware as we are. Now, if they put us in charge of the economy, maybe we could do something worthwhile. Well, you talk about alternatives, and electric cars are one. You know, theoretically, electricity can be sustainable. We could get our electricity from wind and from hydro dams and without having to burn fuels to get the electricity. The only thing is, right now, there is I don't think that we're going to get enough electricity from sustainable sources to run the economy, the kind of economy we have now. We may have to cut back on some things. We may have to have a more basic economy where we have our food and housing and a decent life for everybody. And we may have to cut out some of the gaudier uses of electricity, unless they come up with some sort of new form of energy that we haven't tapped yet. But I think that's a real possibility. It's the only way to go is some kind of sustainable power, and we are heading in that direction, not fast enough, but that we're going in that direction, mainly because the oil industry is kind of collapsing. So, but whether it will power everything we use right now, I have my doubts. I think of, if you were around, say, in 1950, you know, we lived a pretty good life then. We had radio, TV, we had movies, we had, you know, a lot of the stuff we have now. But we used, as a society, I think we used less than half the energy we use right now. And so it is possible to have a decent life on much less energy than we consume right now. Other countries in Europe who actually probably have a higher standard of living than we do, they use less energy too. We waste an awful lot. America is a very wasteful country, and the reason why is probably from its history of striking this huge bonanza of free land for the taking, and cheap oil, and that kind of mentality is carrying us through right now, where the land is not cheap and the oil is not cheap, and so but we still got this mindset where we can just kind of the sky's the limit, and we can just kind of live high for the rest of our lives. And that may be very well be how those reindeer felt out there on St. Matthew Island, you know, munching on their lichens, all 6,000 of them, thinking, wow, this is wonderful. This is paradise. This is our bonanza. We have all this food just it's right here before us. Well, the reindeer didn't know that they were going to outrun that food supply very shortly. And so we are in this kind of a situation right now where, when Donald Trump talks about making America great again, maybe that's what he is referring to, a kind of a prosperity that only existed for a short time and that was based on a kind of a false foundation. And so there we go.
Am I still on?
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Well, okay. I just want to say, though, that once again, we know there is a problem. We actually already do know that. Now, you were saying that you don't think that Donald Trump knows it, but he's not listening right now.
No, he's not. He's listening to his inner voices.
You know what? You have cable listeners, and you know, I'd like to know what what you think some of the solutions are that, you know, that we can get involved in locally.
Well, locally,
I suppose. I'm going to go off the air now. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, locally, I guess I think the future is agriculture, a kind of sustainable agriculture, and you know, we have, in some ways, we're pretty fortunate. We have a lot of farms. We have very good soil around. We haven't destroyed it all yet, although down in the valley, a lot of that wonderful farmland is used to grow grass seed. And, grass seed is not something we need in a new society. We should probably be replacing that with sustainable farming, I think, less reliance on oil, we will probably have smaller farms. The difference between a large garden and a small farm is just a matter of degree. So this is something that people at any level can take part in. And so that is where we are right now. There are things we can do in making agriculture something that everybody can do. And that is something that is rewarding and will bring us benefits right off the bat. And the first caller, when he talked about biochar, made a very interesting point about that. In a way, sometimes I think the future for everybody lies in the Zapatista movement in Chiapas in Mexico. This is an indigenous movement that grew up in opposition to NAFTA and the trade deals, and they have these sustainable communities in Chiapas, and they have a way of organizing their communities that we may wind up emulating in the future. But that is sort of a way forward and not a way back, like the future that we get from our political parties and the economic superstructure that just wants to burn more oil and whatever. And so that is where we are now and where we can go. And let's hope we don't wind up like all those reindeer on St. Matthew Island. So stay tuned to KBOO, your radio station.